Hope you're having a good Thursday evening, and thank you for joining us on News Talk 790 WNIS. Our good friend Dr. Denise Foster is back with us from Hemp Haven Wellness, just below the North Carolina-Virginia border at 726 Carrituck Highway in beautiful Moyock, North Carolina. HempHavenWellness.com is her website, 252-340-3557, her number. If you want to stop in and see Dr. D, it's an excellent beach weekend, so if you maybe want to head down to the Outer Banks, make a stop at Hemp Haven. It's right off the bypass. You can stop in on your way down to the beach. She's open 7 days a week, Sunday through Wednesday, 11 a.m. till 7 p.m., an extra hour Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 11 a.m. till 8 p.m., and there is delivery available from Hemp Haven as well. Just check out the website, HempHavenWellness.com, for more. Of course, she's got Tuxcana Cabana going on down there as well. We'll talk about that coming up a bit. First and foremost, welcome back to the Mighty 790, Dr. D. What's going on, man?
Thank you, thank you. Cannabis is hot. Hot, hot, hot.
Hot.
Hot, hot, hot.
Hot, hot, hot.
Hot, hot, hot.
That's right.
Our cabana is open. We are enjoying the improvements that we're starting to make, and we're getting a great response from our community. We're going to have just wonderful events over the course of the summer, and it's a place for community to meet and interact and maybe learn a thing or two.
Think of it like a canna bar. You know what I mean? It's one of those community places where people can come together. They can hang out. Take a break from being stressed out during the week from work or whatever it may be. And a beautiful setting. Sometimes you've got live music going on
down there.
We've got live
music. We've got live music this Sunday. This Sunday is going to be, Melanie Houdershell. She is a local. She has been featured at the Bonzer Shack out in Outer Banks. So she goes all the way down there. And she's also up here in Chesapeake and Virginia Beach. And she's, all over the place. Wonderful musician. She's got a voice of an angel. So we're going to be starting to bring in some local artists, some local creative minds, some activities. And that's where, again, we're really helping to change this stereotype, change this stigma, because, of course, bars have been at it for how long? Well, ever since Prohibition, right? The 17th Amendment, I think, reversed prohibition of alcohol back in the 1940s. So alcohol has had its chance, but we've reported here over the last several years about alcohol's slight decline. As it is now moving over to cannabis land. And that's where there's things that are happening all over the place, including Virginia, but we'll get to that. One of my most favorite things that came out of cannabis land just recently was a report that a hemp-based plastic, so think of this, hemp is not just a CBD derivative, right? We can get CBD and other compounds out of hemp as well as marijuana, but hemp has more of the industrial features to it, and every part of the hemp plant is very effective, very useful. We've used it in fibers, we've used it in seeds and animal feed and animal bedding and hemp seed oil as fuel and fibers and paper, etc. Here's a new study that shows that a hemp-based plastic is showing promise as an environmentally friendly alternative to traditional plastic packing materials. And what do we know that those packing materials of plastic are made from? Petroleum. And this is why in the landfills and on beaches in the Caribbean and all across the world, we just have tons and tons of plastic that does not break down. But what's interesting about this, and this was published just last month in May in the journal Chem Circularity, a team of scientists and engineers showed how a hemp-derived thermoplastic can stretch up to 16 times its original length with high glass transition temperature, meaning it allows the plastic to stay dry and durable even when it encounters hot boiling water. We'll try that with a petroleum-based plastic. What's really interesting is that in this particular formulation, the hemp has a very smooth film covering it, and the researchers have noted that the materials with this property can be used as nanoparticles for drug delivery and catheter coatings. Now we're moving into the realm of medical supplies and equipment. And what's best about this is that it can be recycled. It goes either into the recycler and can be reused again and reformulated, or it can be planted in the ground and it's biodegradable. So a big push is now happening in the hemp world. We're seeing all kinds of movement along with marijuana. And here's one. I hope my man Jay Lee is listening. Mr. Sports on WNIS. Just today, the WNBA has removed marijuana from its banned substance list.
Wow. Okay.
They are no longer going to be subjected to drug testing with THC unless it becomes a visible problem, in which time they will be again offered, you know, counseling and drug support, you know, drug therapy support, et cetera.
Sure.
Well, the WNBA, the collective bargaining agreement that was just made, also sets rules for player endorsements of hemp CBD products.
Mm, they see that there's some money to be made here.
So get ready, right? On your WNBA side, you may be seeing some of the athletes begin promoting some CBD hemp products. And of course, we know that athletes are using CBD, and now the WNBA is not worried about their own medical or recreational marijuana use.
I was just thinking, I was trying to remember if another sports league has done that already, if the NBA had already done it previously or not, because the WNBA has actually been kind of forward-thinking in a lot of areas. So.
They're one of the last. The NBA, the NBA did it in 2023, the NFL in 2024, even the NCAA, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, did it in 2024 as well, because guess where, you know, a lot of this stuff is happening in college, right? So the movements regarding both the hemp and expanding the role of hemp in our society and using it for, in this case, an ecologically, environmentally friendly substance that has multiple purposes. Who knows what this type of plastic can be, all the way here to our sports entertainers that are now seeing this for the medicine that it is. And here's where we are just we're becoming more I of course referred this as before the schizophrenic United States. It's now becoming more of the who's going to get to the finish line first. Virginia is not. Virginia is going to be in last place. Of course, if you were paying attention just last month on May, I believe it was 21st or 20th, Governor Spanberger vetoed the adult use cannabis marijuana bill that had moved through the Senate and was waiting on either an approval or a veto. And she vetoed it. And what's interesting is just a few days later, she appeared on a podcast. Let me see who this is. Content creator Tevin Davis. She was on the podcast talking about how the veto was implemented, and she made a surprising confession. Her own family and friends are extremely angry and displeased with her for this downvote for cannabis. What's interesting is that she has also admitted that it's entire, and this is a quote from the interview, it's entirely possible that the things I'm worried about, maybe I'm worried about too much. This is very disconcerting to me because we know that Governor Northam in 2021 started this path for adult legal use in Virginia. Governor Northam put the brakes on it, and it was the hope after it had passed the Virginia legislature for the third year in a row that at least Governor Spanberger would be implementing it. And the concern here is that she herself put together her own team and connected to other states and got their opinions, but is not very forthcoming about who those states were that she was contacted and what types of advice did they give her. Her excuse is that it's not ready to be implemented safely. What happened to the 6 years of the lawmakers and the local committees? For instance, I know Virginia Beach has its own Virginia Beach Cannabis Advisory Council, and they were putting together, I'm sure, appropriate regulations for public safety, public health, prevention of children's access and substance abuse precautions. So I'm sure that even in Virginia Beach, locally, they were meeting for years, making sure that when legalization was ready, they were ready to implement it. And this is where Virginia lawmakers have actually kind of, they're going to try to do an end run. They're going to try to put the marijuana sales legalization into the budget bill. And this is where it's going to be dicey. Of course, we're waiting in Virginia for a budget bill. Now they're going to be adding this potential implementation to the budget to say, well, we have the money for it, and we have to appropriate it, and we have to use it, because that's what you do in your bills. You have to use the funds that have been appropriated. So we're going to see how that works. That's a little political game, and I have no explanation for why that happened. It was kind of not surprising, but it was not something that I think was treated fairly for Virginians, because Virginians have been very patient.
When she says, yeah, I may be worrying about these issues a little bit too much, we'll see. Isn't it your job to kind of figure that out before you decide whether to vote for it or against it?
And correct me if I'm wrong, didn't she campaign like Governor Northam? Governor Youngkin, that she was looking forward to the implementation of the adult cannabis use market. This is where the schizophrenia is starting to become more and more an alignment, less schizophrenia. And what is driving all of that? Why? It's the revenues coming from this. And this is why the DEA is now actually kind of getting kicked to the curb in rescheduling progress. The DEA has been sitting on an administrative hearing since December of 2025. I'm sorry, I think December 2024. And what they're doing is they're just kind of dragging their feet. But in a new argument is coming, in which states that the language of the DEA's regulations and reasons for dragging their feet are really not appropriate, and they are interpreted inappropriately, because we also now are turning our sovereign eye of gaze to another federal bill that was overturned, called Chevron. And if you know anything about Chevron, up to when it was overturned just a few years ago, Chevron would defer to the experts in their fields. But when Chevron was in place, the government was the deferential argument. And it was always the government wins. That's why you could never sue the federal government, because the government always wins. Well, when Chevron was overturned, that put the onus of the regulations on the experts to testify or give witness as to what would be appropriate. And the new argument is in the scientific and medical research that, has been funded by the federal government. It has overwhelmingly demonstrated that these compounds are not only safe, non-toxic, non-lethal, non-fatal, with one compound in concern, our THC molecule, with the other 150 or so discovered to date of valuable, effective medical and wellness health benefits. So we have these large bodies of empirical research that, when we look through it, we are not now meeting the standards that have been implemented under the Controlled Substance Act by the DEA. So this is where the legal mumbo jumbo at the federal level is starting to wear down. And it will be, I believe, not maybe this year, but definitely by the end of 2027, we will see a movement to Schedule 3, effectively making cannabis legal, but still must be recommended and prescribed by a healthcare practitioner.
Altogether now, cannabis is medicine.
Cannabis is medicine. There you go. And here's another lawsuit that was just challenged on the Medicare CBD program. If we were listening last month, Medicare launched a pilot program in Colorado where they are going to be reimbursing Medicare and Medicare Advantage customers, users, $500 a year in CBD products. This is because the government is now the biggest drug dealer at both the federal and state level. And so, of course, as soon as this program was implemented, we had all the prohibitionists jump on board going, oh, no, this is just terrible. Don't do this. It's just making more drug users. Well, this lawsuit, a federal judge has just dismissed this lawsuit. It was led by my favorite prohibitionist group to hate, Smart Approaches to Marijuana. They've made it their full-time job to go against cannabis legalization, even hemp legalization. But they failed, these plaintiffs at Smart Approach to approaches to marijuana failed to show they had standing to bring the case. The claims of injury that they tried to present regarding CBD in lieu of Medicare to cover it, they said they were too abstract in injuries or too remote to even begin addressing harm. Because what have we found in the decades of research on CBD? There are no harms. There are zero harms. In fact, we're going to talk in the second half of the hour about all of the research that's come out, which is more than likely the rationale for why Medicare is now considering covering CBD as part of its federal funding. Other things behind the scenes, we've got, again, if we're moving and looking at Schedule 3, there's a lot of threads that have to be teased out in this movement at the federal level. For one thing, all cannabis companies in the United States are not actually traded on the New York Stock Exchange. Many of them, including the Canadian marijuana companies, are traded on the NASDAQ. Well, that is about to change. Trulieve just announced today that they are restructuring and separating their multi-use businesses. And what this means is, first of all, Trulieve is based in Florida. What do we know about Floridians? There's a lot of retirees down there. And what are they all using? Medical marijuana or hemp.
Which, again, is the demographic that most frequently uses this.
Absolutely.
Stuff. Yeah.
So Trulieve, actually, Kim Rivers is the CEO of Trulieve. I have to give her a lot of credit because if you were paying attention to the cannabis campaigns that were going on during the last election, it was Kim Rivers, the CEO of Trulieve down there in Florida, who was in President Trump's ear. And I truly believe that she is one of the reasons that we're now on this pathway, because she had data that could not be refuted. Again, she more than likely presented that also to Dr. Oz, who is our Secretary for the Health and Human Services, or Medicare, I'm sorry, Medicare Director, CMS Director. So when you're looking at Trulieve, Trulieve has just today filed to restructure its business model of multi-use cannabis, meaning that they both Trulieve houses both medical marijuana and recreational adult use marijuana. That was shot down in Florida, but Trulieve has dispensaries for adult use all over the country, not in Virginia. But with this filing at the New York Stock Exchange, they are now wanting to apply to be listed for their medical marijuana branch. This is moving behind the scenes, and this is an indication that we are going to be seeing federal restructuring of numerous entities. In this case, we're looking at finance. We're looking at the FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Network. We're looking at what is going to be allowed through the financial organizations under the FDIC rules, the banking, the financing, the loans, etc. So these are things that are going on behind the scenes. However, those federal agencies still have a duty to protect. And this is where it all has to be, of course, about public safety. And the Department of Transportation has come out to clarify that not only are truck drivers who have CDLs and are over the road, they will still continue to be tested for THC, regardless of whether or not they hold a medical marijuana card. And also, this drug testing rule extends to flight attendants. So the flight attendants were asking some questions like, hey, I'm in Florida, I've got a medical marijuana card, and that should exempt me, right? No. According to the Association of Flight Attendants, a positive Department of Drug test for marijuana remains a violation even if they use marijuana legally under state law. And that includes both medical and recreational marijuana. So we're still considering these safety, public health concerns, because we don't have enough data that is nationwide, everyone is using it. So, of course, we are always going to err on the side of harm reduction. That is the cannabis as medicine model, harm reduction. We don't want you to be unduly stressed when you're in flight. We already know the Pilots Association is absolutely not at all. the arguments here are the issue is, of course, the THC testing parameters. This is where we still need the research on how to correlate a THC blood test, a THC urine test, a follicular test, a saliva test with impairment. And that's the problem that we have. We treat THC and cannabis use as a linear model like we do with alcohol. One beer, you're okay maybe, but 10 beers is a different story. This is not the case with THC because where it sits in the body, it sits in the fat cells and it can be harbored there for days, weeks, especially if you're a chronic user. I'm sure our good buddy Willie Nelson never is THC free anymore. So the issue is Willie Nelson stoned all the time? Well, what do we know about THC? It creates tolerance, and those users who do have chronic high tolerance will never be able to become impaired because it just takes too much THC in their system. So as you can see, there's still a lot of this technological benchmarking parameters correlating that THC level to impairment, and that's where many of these probably professional associations like the pilots, CDL, safety, security, sensitive, flight attendants, et cetera. These are the individuals that will benefit from that type of research, but we're just not there yet. We have a long way to go because why? We're still trying to get it legal and in everybody's hands if that's what they choose to do.
She's Dr. Denise Foster from Hemp Haven Wellness, 726 Carrotoke Highway, right below the Virginia-North Carolina border. If you're just joining us, Dr. D is with us until 7. HempHavenWellness.com is her website. She's open 7 days a week. Stop in and see her. It's going to be excellent weather. If you want to go to the beach this weekend, maybe take a trip down to the Outer Banks, stop and see Dr. D at Hemp Haven on the way. Open 7 days a week, 11 a.m. till 7 p.m., an extra hour Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. That's from 11 a.m. till 8 p.m. Delivery is also available. If you're not able to make it down there, you can maybe go the delivery route. Just check out the website for more info on that, hemphavenwellness.com. And if you are able to make it down there, definitely spend some time and check out Tuck's Canna Cabana, which is now open at Hemp Haven as well. We got more with Dr. D coming up right here on News Talk 790 WNIS. That's 757-627-7979 if you want to be a part of the program. You can also email us if you're shy and you don't want to go on the radio. You can email your question for Dr. D, Lee at WNIS.com. More coming up. Dr. D over there, Dr. Denise Foster from Hemp Haven Wellness, 726 Carrotoke Highway, just below the Virginia-North Carolina border, talking all things cannabis, CBD, hemp, talking wellness on the Mighty 790. She's with us for about another 25 minutes or so, L-E-E at WNIS.com if you want to get a question in to Dr. D. Of course, there is no shortage of things for us to talk about whenever she's on the radio with us, so we'll get right back to it. HempHavenWellness.com is her website, though. Do want to mention that. Check her out. And she's open 7 days a week, 11 a.m. till 7 p.m., and then an extra hour Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 11 a.m. till 8 p.m. Dr. D with us on the Mighty 790.
When you know that the first quarter of the year is over and the cannabis reports start coming in, and Virginia is woefully out of the loop, you begin to realize why states, 47 states have now legalized medical marijuana. We're behind in adult use, of course, because while they are the same marijuana, same cannabis, we are, I guess, a little too shy to allow adults to use it in place of alcohol or tobacco or pharmaceuticals. And so we're going to just mislabel it and make sure that you know that it's medical. But here's some numbers I'm going to throw at you. So, for instance, our tried and true California, that are the state that was first on the scene, they legalized in November of 2016 and they began sales in January 2018. Get this, $8.1 billion with a B, all-time tax revenue since implementing in 2018, $8 billion. And the first quarter this year, a cool $248 million.
Hey now.
Wow. And what are their, so they, again, they have presented a good model for safety. And most of these tax revenues go toward child care and early childhood development programs, medical research, youth substance abuse programs and prevention, and environmental restoration. Let's move to Florida. This is where we now know the states, along with the federal government, are the biggest drug dealers in the United States of cannabis. So Florida, medical marijuana sales, they dispensed dispensed 9 billion milligrams of THC in 2026 to date. 9 billion milligrams. Ha, ha. I know people out there going, what the heck is that? That's a mountain of weed is what it is. A mountain of weed. With their smokable sales with 3 million ounces. 3 million ounces. And they approved their medical marijuana program in 2016. They're still debating the adult sales use, but at least their medical marijuana program is off and running thanks to many of the seniors that now are getting obtaining their medical marijuana card. Massachusetts, little old Massachusetts, they legalized in 2016 and opened November of 2018. Massachusetts has amassed $11 billion in legal marijuana sales.
They have amassed?
Amassed. Very $11 nice. Billion with a B. Just to date, up to date this year, to the first quarter, it was $700 million with $112 million in May alone. Virginia don't need any of that money, do they?
No, of course Virginia not. We're doing okay.
No.
What could we do with it? We're talking about shutting down schools in the city of Norfolk because we can't afford to keep them open. We don't need any extra money.
No. Little old Minnesota. They legalized in 2023 and they opened in 2023. They have up to date $119 million in up to 2026 sales, with $28 million occurring in May alone. Oregon, another favorite West Coastie, they legalized in 14 and opened in 2015. They have amassed $8.5 billion in marijuana sales. In May alone, they've done $77 million, and in 2026 to date, they have done $374 million. What's interesting is Oregon is one of the lowest cannabis costs at a dispensary. For those of you who are paying attention in the back to the cost of cannabis, listen to this. Oregon is selling their cannabis $3.33 per gram. That's called the law of supply and demand, isn't it? A few more states here. Pennsylvania, that legalized in 2016 and opened in 2018. Their sales are at $453 million in the first quarter of this year. $453 million. Little old Rhode Island, that was legal just in 2022, they have seen sales top $50 million through May. And this is where their taxes are really a lot of that, because up in Rhode Island, you're going to get taxed at 20%. And here we go. The last state I want to comment on is good old Utah. Utah's medical marijuana sales are at $17 million in May. As of to date, they have $84 million in 2026 sales. These are not numbers to sneeze at.
Especially not $50 million for Rhode Island. Remember how small Rhode Island
small,
is.
Rhode Island could probably fit in Hampton Roads. I don't know, right?
Huge number.
These are huge numbers. And these numbers, year over year, continue to increase. It's growing like a weed because people are turning to these compounds. And marijuana is, of course, distinctive because it does have the higher THC concentrations. But that's where people like me, cannabis nurses, I got a wonderful dispensary full of cannabis nurses to serve for education, coaching, making sure that you're using this safely under the harm reduction model. Because here's another thing that's happening behind the scenes. Delaware, I'm going to read a couple more states. Now we're moving out of the money situation. Delaware, Louisiana just today, Pennsylvania and Virginia, all of these states' governors have signed bills that are now allowing medical marijuana use in hospitals by terminally ill patients. So if you're working in a hospital or you're going to a hospital and you're a medical marijuana patient, know that in some cases, I believe, like for in Virginia, this process, written guidelines for the use of medical cannabis within medical care facilities and the safe operations of medical care facilities must be presented by November 1st of this year. This means that hospitals, hospice and palliative care, assisted living facilities, these entities are going to have to begin developing policies regarding implementation of these bills that are now allowing medical marijuana patients to bring their medical marijuana into the hospital. And even Virginia, I believe Governor Spanberger went even further, and there's a bill moving through the legislature that is going to insist that hospitals also include medical marijuana in their hospital formularies, meaning it can be dispensed directly from the hospital pharmacy. It's moving at a very quick pace into the mainstream at both the social levels, where we're looking at job descriptions and safety and how we can use the revenues generated from the sales. And now we're moving into medicine. And here's where CBD is just getting all of the glory. Sorry, marijuana, you don't get to participate in this, because CBD is the main component that is derived in higher concentrations from hemp, along with the other non-impairing compounds. We can get THC from it, but we typically like to microdose those because, mm-hmm. again, we're talking impairment. We're talking, we don't want you to be unsafe and you know, where's my car? Dude, where's my car? So here's some studies that showed, first of all, marijuana dispensaries and legalization are now being linked to fewer non-fatal opioid poisonings. So now we're reducing the risk of you using with an opioid, because you can use marijuana with an opioid, and now you're going to be lessening the amount or the dosage of opioids you use. Now we're talking less fatalities associated with overdosing. A couple studies here that were shocking to us as nurses. First of all, a study came out that has debunked the lazy stoner stereotype. This study came out to show that cannabis users are definitely improving on their subjective experiences of exercise. They enjoy it more. They have less discomfort, and they are directly enhancing their physical performance. And this is consistent across cannabis use, because these individuals seem to be more motivated to use cannabis to go out and do something fun and enjoy it. So now we're reducing that stereotype associated with lazy stoner.
We look at a stoner like they're a slacker, but that's not the case.
That's not the case.
They are not the same.
And here's another surprising one, because we also associate getting stoned, getting high, with getting the munchies.
Right.
Well, marijuana can play a role in combating obesity. A federally funded study funded by the National Institutes of Health and the University of California's Tobacco-Related Disease Research Program found that whole cannabis extracts, so not just THC, not just CBD, but whole cannabis extracts, they found that these robustly, that means a lot, very strongly, reduced body weight and visceral adiposity. Visceral adiposity is the sandbags, is the muffin top. This is the fatty tissue that typically collects in areas where fat is stored, and that is, you know, kind of in the trunk area, the arms, etc. And they found that they also not only had reduced body weight with lesser of this type of fat, they also showed notable improvements in glucose homeostasis, meaning that the body began to balance its glucose use for energy. This was a study published just last month in the Journal of Physiology. So this is debunking what we considered. You're a stoner and you're lazy, and all stoners are fat and lazy because they eat the munchies all the time. One third of adults have found that marijuana improves their sleep, according to the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. Nothing new there. It seems like in our shop, we're running a special on sleep. Everybody comes in and says, I need something for sleep. I need something for sleep. So using these compounds in this particular study, while they used marijuana, it didn't require a large amount of THC, which is where you, again, need to figure out your dose. Here's another great research study that came out. CBD suppresses HIV replication and immune inflammation. So now we're talking some very aggressive viral diseases. CBD that was given without the antiretroviral therapy that typically is prescribed to HIV patients, it actually reduced the number of inflammatory compounds that would create the problem with immune cells in HIV. Wow. So now we're looking at reducing HIV symptoms. Here's another. CBD improves memory and reduces brain oxidative stress after chronic stress and alcohol exposure. We're seeing a lot of alcohol-related injuries that we're helping to reduce the oxidative stress from alcoholism, as well as chronic stress. That's a cortisol problem. Chronic stress creates cortisol, and we don't know what happens when you're running from the dinosaur every day, 24 hours a day. Your body begins to break down. So we're looking at doses here that are a little bit higher than what we would typically recommend, but that's where the research is going. We're now developing protocols and parameters for safe dosing. And for instance, if you're looking to reduce alcohol exposure damage related inflammation or chronic stress inflammation, we can help with that by following this type of research. CBD may protect Parkinson's related brain cells. So it's not just one particular disease or chronic condition. When you are looking at oxidative stress, that's inflammation. Remember, I'm going to say it again, the government owns the patent on cannabis as medicine for its antioxidant and neuroprotective effects. This is not surprising. And now the repetitive data, the repetitive research that comes out about CBD, the non-intoxicating, non-impairing compound, has so many uses. It lowers muscle aging. Again, we're reducing the oxidative stress, while at the same time, the CBD in this particular study, I found this to be very interesting, this actually helped with gut microbiota. And if you know anything about GI conditions, they are typically have a disruption in the symbiosis, the gut biota, the bacteria that live there. CBD reduces markers of cellular aging as well as protects the intestinal tissues that regulates the genetics tied to the intestinal barrier. So it balances out the gut as well. CBD has been shown to be improving social symptoms in children with autism. This is something that you and I have talked about before, because we do have a lot of research that comes from our federal government that shows CBD can be used to treat symptoms, irritability, tantrums, anxiety, repetitive behaviors. CBD can reduce those types of behaviors in autistic children. And in this particular study that was published just this month in the Journal of Child and Adolescent Psychopharmacology, found that CBD was well tolerated in these children and teenagers aged 7 to almost 18 with the autism spectrum disorders, with a significant improvement in a 6-week trial. So in 6 weeks, non-intoxicating, non-impairing. Here we get into the oxycodone pain relieving effects. CBD enhances that oxycodone pain effect, meaning that we can now give you more CBD with your oxycodone. So now we're removing that risk that's associated with THC and creating over impairment, as CBD will actually reduce the number or dosage needed of oxycodone, which is an opioid, and it also begins to mitigate or lessen those reward-related effects that typically come from oxycodone. We're seeing a lot of individuals coming to the cannabis nursing consultations requesting help to transition off their pain management protocols. And many pain management treatment centers in our area, practices in our area, are starting to refer to us, because we will not do that alone. You must bring a referral and we will work in tandem with your pain management therapies. But this is, again, another indication that this is an avenue where the science is supporting a safe transition off of opiates, and pain management treatment centers are no longer going, no THC for you. But this is a great indication that we don't need to use THC. Maybe we can just begin using a higher dose CBD. When we talk about other things, let's look at CBD with neuropathic pain. High-dose CBD has been found to reduce neuropathic pain in spinal cord injury patients. Back to dosage. This particular study showed up to 800 milligrams with very minor adverse effects such as tiredness, sleepiness, nausea, diarrhea, loss of appetite. The participants had at least a 30% reduction in neuropathic pain from spinal cord injury. Looking at other compounds, we've talked before about CBG. CBG, cannabigerol, this is another non-impairing, non-intoxicating compound. We have been seeing great effects from using this standalone. We have also just seen a study. So in this particular study that came out in the journal Pharmaceuticals last month, they found that CBG has a specific effect on anti-tumor effects, such as glioblastoma. They also found that it has a great activity against lung and kidney cancer, with breast cancer, et cetera, prostate cancer. So knowing which compound goes to which disease process helps with this cancer thing. CBD increases tamoxifen-induced cell death in breast cancer cells. So you're using tamoxifen. This is a typical breast cancer type process, a treatment. But we know anything with chemotherapy related, it also attacks, it's not discriminating, it also attacks the human cells as well, the cancer cells. So in this particular research, they found that CBD significantly increased the tamoxifen-induced cell death, meaning that we gave the same tamoxifen, and just by administering CBD with it, it helped the tamoxifen work even better. It also showed to help restore sensitivity, because just like any other drug, there will come a point where the tamoxifen becomes tolerant. The cancer cells do not respond to the tamoxifen, and that's the point when the oncology team have to switch to a different chemotherapy. Well, CBD helped restore that sensitivity to the tamoxifen. Crazy times. CBDA, another compound that is non-intoxicating, non-impairing. We sell CBDA. This one has been shown to block key enzymes tied to aggressive breast cancer cell movement. So this particular breast cancer cell, it could travel. Breast cancer cells could travel to the brain, the lungs, etc. CBDA has been shown to stop it from traveling, and this was just published a few weeks ago in the Journal of Biochemistry. CBD reduces chemotherapy-linked cognitive decline, a feature called chemo brain. This is because, again, it's non-discriminatory, and it will attack the cells of the brain and in addition to the cancer cells, whether you want them to or not. By administering CBD with these chemotherapy-related drugs, it reduced the cognitive impairments, meaning that it reduced the chemo brain, the chemo fog that people may develop once they undergo chemotherapy treatments. Back to CBG. CBG has also shown promise in treating rheumatoid arthritis. CBD, CBG, and many of the other compounds have been shown, again, to provide significant improvements in pain for fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, and osteoarthritis as well. I am back to the premise that there is nothing that we have attended to as far as a condition or a disease that we cannot treat with cannabis. Why? Because our body has an endocannabinoid system whose only function in our body is to maintain and restore wellness throughout the internal environment and in reaction to the external environment. And the only compounds that stimulate this endocannabinoid system are the compounds that you find in cannabis, which makes you go, why did our government ban this? And then all of a sudden, we had Rockefeller Medicine delivering petrochemicals known as pharmaceuticals to us for the last 80 years. Whereas back to the lawsuit, moving through the DEA and the rescheduling process, they're going to have a hard time demonstrating that 80 years of federally funded research from institutions like the NIH, the CDC, the National Institute on Drug Abuse, that has had a extremely large body of research attached to it since the 1960s, when, of course, the United States government began growing cannabis at the University of Mississippi in 1964. We are turning the corner here. I pray for Virginia. North Carolina is in a different pathway, as much of the rest of the country is. And in all measures, financial health, public health, individual health, community health, cannabis seems to be, as John President Kennedy once said, lifting all boats. Cannabis is the green. Lifting all the boats. So it's a green tide, a rising tide. But we are well on our way, and we are here at Hemp Haven to serve our community.
Always a pleasure when you're here. Always super informative. When are you going to let me come down and do a show from Tuxcana Cabana?
Aren't we scheduled for July 11th?
July 11th, that's right.
Right, July 11th.
So I'll be doing my weekend show, my Saturdays at noon Lee Foster radio experience from Tuxcana Cabana. Go see Dr. D. Don't wait until then, though. Go see her this weekend if you have time.
Yeah, we've got our yoga instructor, our yoga leader. We're going to be offering free classes on Wednesday. Two classes at 12:30 to 1:30, and then 6 to 7 in the evening every Wednesday, weather permitting, out in the cabana. We've already had our first sessions, and they were just wonderful.
And talk about the live music again.
We're going to have live music this Sunday from 3 to 6. It's going to be Melanie Haldershell, voice of an angel. She's a wonderful acoustic guitarist and very local. And so we're starting to build up July 4th. We've already got our band scheduled. It's going to be the We Jam Band. So we're going to bring some community events and get a little bit of pre-COVID fun. Because COVID pretty much shut down everything, didn't it?
Yeah, a lot changed.
A lot changed after COVID.
Dr. Denise Foster, HempHavenWellness.com is the website. Hemp Haven Wellness is at 726 Carrotoak Highway, just below the Virginia-North Carolina border. You can, of course, visit the website. Also, call her, 252-340-3557. There's delivery options available. If you can't make it down to her, check out the website once again, HempHavenWellness.com. And she's open 7 days a week, Dr. D. And her team of cannabis nurses, 11 a.m. till 7 p.m., extra hour Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, 11 a.m. till 8 p.m. And she's with us, of course, on Ask the Expert Monthly, and she joins me, and she joins McCready, and you'll hear from her again soon on the Mighty 790. Once again, HempHavenWellness.com's that website. Thank you, Dr. D.
Yeah, let's go.